CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Go out to the sunny beaches of Cancun. He's nice enough to join us despite being on vacation. We said you don't have to do it, man, but he loves the Chiefs so much. Joshua Briscoe, our Chiefs contributor from ChiefsOnSI.com, joins us. He's presented by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City. Discover the benefit of blue. I mean, I hope you're just sitting already having maybe a mimosa or something on the beach.
I have taken a few opportunities, not this morning, but so far in the last however long we've been here, 35 hours or something. I have had a few different tequilas, so I am making good use of my time. But not only do I love talking about the Chiefs, I love talking to you, and that's really what's got me here today.
Yeah, I appreciate you calling in, man. I definitely do. So the story all week was no doubt the ankle injury, and then it turned out to almost like not be a big deal. Suddenly, once Mahomes opened his mouth and started talking on Tuesday, it was like, all right, yeah, that guy's playing.
Yeah, it's wild, and I don't know, man. Maybe this is a little bit on us that we, and I think we had the appropriate skepticism from the jump that he was going to in any way respond like a normal football player, or even more so a normal quarterback when he did go out with the injury. We knew he could have probably returned to the game, but even then, like, I don't ever want to get numb to what we're watching with Patrick Mahomes, and usually that's a conversation about what's happening on the field. I took it for granted, but I continually tried to remind myself that he is a human being, not an alien sent from another universe to conquer the sport of football here on this planet. But then he bounces back from something like that, and of course we'll see how he looks on that ankle. Maybe it's going to be a little bit more laborious for him, but by and large, man, it really is remarkable that he finds ways to completely change expectations, even for things like injury recovery. It's really remarkable.
The time frame of this whole thing is complicated, though, and that's why I think there was some skepticism, just because, hey, you're going to play Saturday, and we all know they got to play Wednesday against the Steelers. That's been my thought the whole week, though. It's not this game on Saturday is, to me, the one you have to have. We know they only need two of them, but this is the one you have to have, because even, you know, you win this game, then you only need to win one out of the next two. But also, like, the turnaround from Saturday to Wednesday, not just for everybody that's quote-unquote healthy, but for that ankle, I mean, that thing is going to be barking on Sunday and Monday and Tuesday, I would imagine, even if he doesn't get rolled up on again. So that's why I feel like tomorrow is so massive to get the win.
No, I agree. I mean, and obviously this is probably, again, pretty evident, but especially with Mahomes pushing through to play in this game. Like, you could have talked me into some world where Carson Wentz gets to start. It's more of a coin flip type of game. I mean, every Chiefs game feels like a coin flip, so what does that change? But, like, you really go in and say, we're comfortable with the idea of maybe not winning this game for the sake of getting a healthier Mahomes against Pittsburgh, and then knowing we're probably going to have to win this game against Denver. Instead, with Mahomes out there gutting it out, noting that I'm with you, I think he might look more mobile against the Texans than he's going to look against the Steelers on Christmas, depending on especially on how the Texans game actually goes. So being able to watch Mahomes push through this, get Hollywood Brown back, all of the things that the Chiefs are benefiting from, obviously left tackle still a little bit of a loss there because of Humphrey still being out, but to have everything pushed into this game on Saturday where the Chiefs really seem to say, we're going for it, this is a game that matters, we're going to treat it like a game that matters. If they do all of that, push all those chips in, and then lose to Houston, it really would take a lot of air out, because now suddenly you maybe had one or two opportunities to give Patrick Mahomes a little time off on that ankle. Now you're not getting a regular season game off, and the one seed itself becomes questionable, because I think that Steelers game on Christmas is going to be a nail biter. Again, every Chiefs game is, so maybe that's obvious.
We're talking to Josh Briscoe, our Chiefs contributor from Sports Illustrated. Are you with me on DJ Humphries, where it's like, hey, I want to see one more game from Humphries? We know it's not going to be tomorrow. Maybe it is the Steelers game. I want to see one more game, because still I believe their best O-line is Humphries at left tackle and then Tooney at left guard. Not Tooney did a great job considering what they're asking this guy to do. He's not a left tackle. He's a left guard, and they're asking him to play left tackle. But you go and get average left tackle play from Tooney, and then you get maybe average left guard play, even though Caliendo graded out really well, versus getting average left tackle play from Humphries and then all-pro left guard play from Tooney. I'd rather have that, and we haven't seen that except for like 3.5 quarters in the first game for DJ Humphries.
Yeah, I think that's probably where the Chiefs' head is at, too, in terms of you can either kind of build your, they talk all the time about the best five. You can kind of build your best five by trying to figure out who has the highest ceiling and who has the highest floor. I think the highest floor right now might be Tooney at left tackle, Caliendo at guard, and then you just wait and see with Humphreys. But the highest ceiling is certainly, to your point, Humphreys, Tooney, and then the rest. And so I do think, and Nate Taylor said this, I don't know if you've talked to him since this was put out there yesterday, but it sounds like they are expecting to have Humphreys back for the Christmas game at this point. So if you give me Christmas, you see what he looks like, hopefully again, with maybe a second game of Hollywood, with Mahomes on a few more days after the ankle. Again, we'll see how he moves there. I do really want to see that orientation back again. The Cleveland game did make me question what took so long on some level. Like, Morris was clearly laboring through that knee. He clearly was having technical issues on so many occasions. I kind of wish, in retrospect, with the benefit of hindsight, I wish they would have pulled that Tooney lever a little bit earlier, and we'd have a better idea and a larger sample size of what the Tooney-Caliendo tackle-guard combo would be. But I think you're right. I think the Chiefs are on the right track. I think Humphreys and Tooney on Christmas is the best-case scenario. Let's see how it looks. And there's very, very, very little time to waste there, which is why this hamstring injury is so frustrating.
What do you make of the Texans? We're going to talk to someone from Houston a little bit later on this hour, but this was a team that, you know, it's 9-5. They're going to probably be locked into the four seed, basically, with the division that they're in and everything and in their record. But they don't look as dangerous as some people thought they were heading into the playoffs last year. And that was rookie year of CJ Stroud.
Yeah, no, they were the team for me that maybe I overbought a little bit of a hype on, because it's very easy to project a second year jump for a young quarterback and for a team that has kind of proven itself as legitimate. And the Texans are a legitimate playoff team, right? I mean, their division has given them some favors this year too. But you mentioned it right at the top of this segment, watching CJ Stroud battle with his own offensive line and then battle with blitzes, and then within the context of that, what simulated pressures are doing to Stroud and can do to this offense right now, I think is a Steve Spagnuolo recipe for success. You can, hopefully now, with some more from Charles Omenihu as he continues to ramp up, you have a competent four-man pass rush, which they didn't have for the first act or couple acts of the season. I think you have a chance to get pressure with four against that offensive line in a couple of soft spots, let Chris Jones demand the attention and push there, and then Spags can dial up blitzes as opposed to almost defaulting to them, which it feels like he's been doing for large portions of the season when the four-man rush was disappointing. So I am a little bit, like, you know, super removed from the Chiefs side of it all. I'm a little disappointed in this Texans team this year, because it did feel like they were kind of going to be the next team that at least joined the next tier of AFC contenders that might be a little bit frisky in a playoff game. Noting who the Chiefs are and who they've been this year, I'm not in any way overly confident that they're going to win this football game, but I have really had a lot of air left out of that Texans hype balloon for me this season.
We're talking to Josh Briscoe from Sports Illustrated. You brought up the defense and getting after C.J. Stroud a little bit. I think it's been very clear since the Minshew came back that this defensive front has had a lot more success. You got to explain something to me, though, about Josh Uche. I think you're so here's the thing. I disagree with you a little bit. I you got to explain to me why I heard you're frustrated by it. Someone's got to explain, why is everybody so bent out of shape about this? They took a flyer on a guy from New England they wanted to get rid of for a couple picks 2 years from now. We all, I thought, agreed that it was a flyer. I did think he'd be playing more too, but like, why is everybody acting like this is like the worst thing ever, and how could they not be playing this guy? It was a flyer for a reason.
I think it's because of how the Chiefs have handled these flyers. They took a flyer on Cam Thomas at roster cutdowns, and he played more snaps against the Chiefs for the Browns than he played for the Chiefs this year. Last year, they do a similar thing for Neil Farrell. He barely ever sees the field, right? And like, even this is a little bit different, but like spending a draft pick on Keandre Coburn, they're like having a sixth-round defensive tackle. Again, we're talking about late draft pick stuff, but it seems like there's some sort of disconnect in how the defensive line is put together and what Steve Spagnuolo wants. And the thing with Uche in particular, that's outside of just the pattern of everybody else, is that he is such a different type of player, that he does have such a different speed, a different flavor from anyone else in this pass rush. This pass rush has looked so stale for so much of the season. Again, Omenihu helps that severely. But I can only watch Mike Dana and George Karloftis slowly walk back tackles while Chris Jones gets hit by like four dudes in a sledgehammer, while Derek Nnadi or Tershawn Wharton's getting one-on-one held up in the middle without thinking, man, it'd be cool for this defense to get a little bit of speed off the edge, but Spags does not seem to really value speed off the edge, bending around that corner. And that's what Uche does well, and we knew that before they traded for him. So my levels of frustration there are that Uche, I think, legitimately has something that no one else on this pass rush has, that the Chiefs did go get him knowing he's a half-season rental at best, and then the Chiefs, he got here, and I think Spags or whoever has said, I don't really see room for him in the rotation right now. I want Mike Dana out there setting the edge 80% of the snaps if I can get him. That's an exaggeration, but it's not for
Carlisle. Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, I hear you on the speed point. There. I hear you on the speed point. He's definitely got a different skill set than what they have. I guess my only pushback would be, hey, the last three games in particular, this defense is playing some of their better football, right? And I think Charles Omeniu is a huge, huge part of that. But Spags, to me, kind of has them rounding into form a bit. And that's not to say they're going to be the same level of defense that they were a year ago. They're not. But this defense is certainly trending in the right direction, and especially if suddenly they can get these takeaways.
100%. I think the ceiling rises when you have a speed edge rusher who could be out there. And frankly, like, I don't necessarily want to make this about this player because we've spent plenty of time over the last couple of years talking about him. But I think if Joshua Uche was a first-round pick and Felix Anudike Uzama was a late midseason flyer, I think Uche would be out there.
That might be fair. Yeah, that might be fair as they continue to try to develop Felix. I think organizations do that quite a bit, so there's probably some truth to that as well. Let me ask you, though, just about the rest of the NFL for a second. We last night saw a pretty good Thursday night game with the Broncos and Chargers. Neither team seems like they're playing at the level they were like 3 or 4 weeks ago, yet the Chargers have a 97% chance or so to make the postseason. The Broncos, I still think, ultimately get in. Do you think either of those teams can win a playoff game on the road?
I think the Chargers, I think they can. Obviously, the matchup and stuff will matter. I think the Chargers can, and I think it's partially for what you saw a little bit of last night, which is that sometimes you get two pretty good teams, and then the one that has a superhero playing quarterback gets some incredible throws in a couple of huge moments, and then that team wins a game that it probably shouldn't have won. So I think Herbert gives them the leg up that the Broncos just don't have in any singular dominant place like that. While Bo Nix was out there throwing passes horizontally and backwards by and large, I think what Herbert was able to do and what he's able to do pretty frequently is incredible. I know Herbert, especially in Kansas City, doesn't have the most glowing reputation because his team hasn't had a whole lot of success, but it was around this time last year, maybe in the same week last year, that the Chargers gave up like 60 to the Raiders in that game, right? They're in a very different place. They have a better head coach and they have a quarterback who's actually got a team around him now. So I do think the Chargers could be a little frisky. I'm not super convinced about Denver.
All right, well, let you get back to the beach, man. Are you just lounge on the beach, relax, enjoy some relaxation overall? Or are you going through zip lining through the forest or something?
No zip lines here today. Typically, my wife and I have been kind of trip planner, so like we'll go and do a bunch of activities and whatnot, but this one in particular that we had a little Black Friday deal that popped up, she'd been keeping an eye out. This is pure relaxation, baby. So I'm hoping the Chiefs don't ruin it for me tomorrow, and I can't go touch as much grass as I could at home, but I'm gonna go touch some sand and try to recenter myself before the playoffs.
There you go, man. Appreciate you calling. Enjoy it. Seriously, happy holidays as well. That's Josh Briscoe, our Chiefs contributor from Sports Illustrated. Kind enough, like we gave him the option. Drew gave him the option. In particular, you sure you want to call in? You're like, you're in Cancun, man. You're on vacation with the wife. He said, no, I want to talk some football. There you go.
Evidently, he loves talking to us more than
I'm very jealous, though.
I don't know.
I mean, look, the weather's not bad in KC for this time of the year. Like, anybody that's lived here knows it could be a million times worse than what we're in. So it could be way, way, way worse. But sitting on a beach, a little Mai Tai, whatever. Whatever fruity drink you want on the beach. Strawberry something. Oh, man.
My brother lives in West Palm Beach, and I don't need to hear it anymore from him, particularly this time of year. Hey, it was 75 degrees outside today. Okay.
I just hope the next time you go back to the beach, Drew, you don't. Nobody takes your family's spot. For those of you who listen to the show for a bit,
you know what?
Outer Banks, Drew's family's got a spot at Outer Banks. Not a spot as in a house constantly.
Correct.
There's a spot on the beach they think is theirs forever. And there another family was
it's not ours, but I will say we have been
there.
Another
family was there and you guys thought they took your spot.
For the first time in I can remember, somebody showed up there at like 6 a.m. to mark their spot. More power to you, I guess, but that had never happened before.
A public beach, right?
Yes.
Then it's not your spot.
Yes, but there's only... Okay, there. in fairness, there are only so many. There's maybe 10 parking spots outside of people who have beach houses.
Sure. There.
So it can't be too many people that are showing up to this spot.
We're not talking about someone took their parking spot.
Correct.
We're talking about
a spot on the beach.
On the public's natural sand. There's a spot, an exact spot their family goes to once or twice a year, right?
Once a year. We've done this for the last, since ever
since
I've been born.
And another family at 7 a.m. or something had that spot.
It was fine. We just went to a different spot. It was just like, dang, they took our spot.
We were very upset at the time. Anytime we talk about the ocean and beach now, I always think of that story from the summertime.
Yeah, we'll have to get an update in July.
Text line says they're on your... Someone says, LOL, I'm on Drew's side with this. You guys should just, put your flag in the ground,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's right. As long as it's nobody's territory, so I can't get a felony for it,
Mm-hmm. That's right. Ohio State. I'm hoping that...
If Tennessee wins, they plant their flag?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it'd be so good.
Oh, it would be awesome.
It'd be amazing. If Tennessee tomorrow night wins and plants a flag at midfield... Oh, my gosh. It would be incredible. It really, really would. All right, we'll get to the trash today in a second, but I mentioned the embargo has been lifted. I'm talking about the Chiefsaholic Amazon doc. So the doc doesn't come out until the 24th. So it's called Chiefsaholic, a Wolf in Chief's Clothing on Amazon. And like everybody at the station, I think, got sent an email to watch the screener of it, right? And probably anybody else in KC Media did. It's not a big deal. But like,
I don't know if I got that email. I'm dead serious. I haven't seen it.
We should ask. We could have gotten you the link. But there was a screener, and it was embargoed until like 8 a.m. this morning. So I watched it a week ago, and we're allowed to talk about it now, but it doesn't come out for a couple days. Some of you might be done with the whole Chiefsaholic thing. We've obviously talked a ton about it over the last year and a half or 2 years and had some fun with it. There's obviously the serious side of it as well, which is highlighted in the documentary of the bank teller who's dealing with the post-traumatic stress from it, and that's why there was a lawsuit and all this stuff. So nobody's discounting the harm mentally maybe that did to employees at the bank that Chiefsaholic robbed. We have to still admit, though, on the other side, there's unbelievable just hilariousness to the fact that this guy was wearing this Chiefs wolf costume at all these games, and then nobody had any clue that he was going around and robbing banks across the country to support his Chiefs trips and perhaps his gambling habits. So anyway, this documentary is way better than the one that was on ESPN. Remember they did like the quick little short 30 for 30? It was literally like 30 minutes and it didn't have much new information. This is 2 hours long. It comes out on the 24th and they were already, and I didn't know, they were already filming Chiefsaholic in the hotel room while he had the ankle monitor on. So remember, he gets arrested for robbing the bank in Bixby, Oklahoma, and then he gets on bail. And then he's wearing the ankle monitor. Eventually, mm-hmm. he cuts it off, right? And we all know then he was on the loose for like 3 months or whatever.
Yeah.
Until they arrested him out in California. And then since then, he's been sentenced to 17 years in federal prison. But they must have already agreed clearly with this Amazon documentary before he ever cut the ankle monitor off, which makes me wonder. Like that, they weren't staying in the room with him, but the footage was. The documentary starts with him watching the Chiefs Eagles Super Bowl, and then eventually he cuts the ankle monitor off, and then they have like they follow the bail bondsman and bounty hunter or whatever. I guess my question is like the Amazon crew, were they not staying like right next door? Like how did
when he broke out?
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm assuming. He cut the ankle monitor off, but the crew wasn't following him the whole time, clearly. Because otherwise, wouldn't they have known that he cut the ankle monitor off?
Yeah, that is a really interesting angle to take. Not that they knew it was happening or whatever, but it does make you curious. They were staying in the same hotel, you would figure the same spot.
I would think. And so the whole doc is way more in depth than any of the other ones. They also interviewed 4 or 5 Chiefs super fans.
So would you say it's good? Like it's a lot better than the ESPN one for
it's
sure.
It's way better than the ESPN one. If you're a Chiefs fan and you're not tired of the story already, then yeah, I think you'll find it to be kind of interesting. And there's humorous elements only because the attorney once again is unbelievable.
Is he?
Yeah, and they clearly before he made the comments on the courthouse steps, he already knew he was going to be in the documentary. If you watch the doc, you'll know why that's the case. It was very evident. Like there's one part very early on, he's like, technically almost everything's illegal in this country, and like that was like just it was. There was some more moments where
that'll be
like
a drop.
This. Yeah, so we'll have to get some drops from the documentary. I enjoyed it. I mean, certainly we've talked about it enough on the show.
a lot of things that we do are illegal in this country, man.
And there's one, my favorite part, honestly, and I wish he still lived in Kansas City. You guys know our good friend Aaron Ladd, who was at 41, and he's now down in his hometown doing TV news and sports for an Atlanta station. There's a part in the documentary, I swear, Chiefsaholic is in his hotel room with an ankle monitor on, and he just got out on bail, and he's scrolling through Twitter. And some of you, your tweet might pop up on because they show a lot of tweets throughout the documentary. And he says he's watching a funny like video like that Aaron Ladd put out there. And Chiefsaholic says, and they kept it in the documentary, he goes, "Man, that Aaron Ladd dude is so effing hilarious." I'm like, man, if Aaron's going to, I don't know if he's going to love that or not. But imagine if he would have said that about anybody at this station about the tweet. But no, he said Aaron Ladd's name gets mentioned in the documentary.
Let's go.
By the felon.
I think you can take it as not necessarily like a badge of honor, but the fact that the other angle, forget who's saying it. You are name dropped in a prime documentary. Mm-hmm. Who knows how many millions of people? Who's Aaron Ladd? Like, we should have kept count. I need to look up how many followers he has just to see if it actually spikes when it comes out to be like, oh, who's this Aaron Ladd guy?
Yeah, someone asked this a good question. They said, was the footage 100% from Amazon or someone that was with him? So I don't know if it was a production company that then sold the rights to it, if you will, to Amazon. That I don't know. But I'll tell you this. It wasn't just random cell phone footage, if that's what you mean, in his hotel room. It was like clearly being professionally shot while Chiefsaholic still had the ankle monitor on before he cut it.
All right, I'm going to keep track. Lad is 17.9.
17.9 thousand followers, are you talking about?
Yeah, 17.9 thousand followers. We need to see if his number skyrockets.
Yeah, and then a lot of the documentary is basically the bounty hunter essentially driving up to Kansas City and staying at Target parking lot, searching for Chiefsaholic's mother, who was living out of a car the whole time. It's that part's whole bizarre.
Jeez.
Like, there, yeah, that whole part's very, very bizarre.
He had all that money, his mom was in a car.
Well,
I know it was obviously stolen money, but.
But he won. Remember, he won the MVP bets and he won the Super Bowl bet. He had over $100,000, and that's how the documentary starts. Is he's like sweating out the big win. I thought this was way better done than the one on ESPN.
I'm excited to watch it because I watched the ESPN one. I'm intrigued to see it. Obviously,
this one's like real, like actual footage of conversations with him and his attorneys.
The whole thing. So,
Pat McAfee's featured a ton. They play a bunch of clips from the Pat McAfee show.
But you guys aren't.
No clips from our show.
Jeez, that's just not right, man.
Did not make the doc, man.
For how much you guys followed it and covered it, obviously I wasn't here for that, man. You guys should have been featured.
Look, and there's no spoiling. We all know how the story ends, so I don't feel like I'm spoiling a documentary. They sent it to us to talk about, and the embargo got lifted this morning, so we're talking about it. But there's one line that's pretty good. So one of the arresting officers with the Bixby Police Department, which was the town where he robbed the bank that ultimately got him caught. He's getting booked and processed, and he hadn't given him his identification. Like, he refused to identify himself. So they were booking him as John Doe initially, technically. But they see he's got a Chiefs tattoo, naturally. The officer goes, "Oh, are you a Chiefs fan?" And Chiefsaholic, they said, just kind of smirked or whatever. And the arresting officer goes, "Well, I'm a Raiders fan. You just got arrested by a Raiders fan," which was a pretty funny line. Ooh. Pretty funny line. Maybe a bit unprofessional, but you know what?
Oh, yeah, it's 100% unprofessional, but it's funny.
It was pretty funny, even if it involves the Raiders. I thought that was a pretty funny line. All right, we went long there. So we have to get to the trash of the day a little bit later on. We've got a good trash of the day as well. But up next, let's go to Houston. Let's find out more about the Texans. Patrick Creighton from our sister station, Sports Radio 610 in Houston, is going to join us right here on Cody and Gold.
Power. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
That's right. It is the Chiefs Red Half Hour. It's Cody and Gold here. Alex Gold, Drew Nixon co-hosting with me today. He's also producing the show. Cody back on Monday. As we get to that time of the year where it's holidays, everybody taking some time off a little bit. We'll have the full crew back together after the new year. We got a couple football games, though, in between that, starting tomorrow against the Texans before the Chiefs take on the Steelers on Christmas Day. Let's go out to Houston and talk with someone I used to work with for a couple years when I was down in Houston as well, Patrick Creighton. He's actually now with our sister station down in Houston, Sports Radio 610. Patrick, what's going on, man? It's good to have you on the show. How are things going?
Hey, what's going on, Alex? Like, number one, man, congratulations for all your success down there in KC. You know, you and Cody do a terrific show. You guys are awesome. And it's great to be on in Kansas City, man. It's been a while since I've been on the air in Kansas City.
Thanks, man. Yeah, the check's in the mail. And yeah, it's been a bit. It's been a bit since we've been talking some football together a little bit. And the last time, you know, the Chiefs and Texans had a game even close to this magnitude was, of course, that playoff game. And we all know the story there with the Chiefs' big lead and ultimately the collapse from Deshaun Watson and Bill O'Brien at the time. Fast forward to this year, I feel like this game preseason felt like it was going to be a bigger matchup with Stroud and Mahomes. And what's happened for Stroud and the Texans this year? They're going to be in the playoffs. They won the division already, but he's not been the same quarterback.
Yeah, it's hard to be the same quarterback when you're always getting your ass kicked. You know, go figure. You know, the Texans' offensive line, they came into this season. You know, last year they had a lot of injuries on the offensive line. They were on, like, center four and tackle five and guard eight. I mean, you're just bringing in anybody and everybody who can play. And they had a piecemeal of the offensive line together most of the year. This year they came in with their starting five healthy, and they were worse. And they weren't just a little worse, Alex. They were, like, oh, my God, worse. And this is a team that, you know, they kind of changed the blocking scheme this year. They've changed up a lot of the formations. You see the Texans go with these condensed formations a lot. And it's made it more difficult for them to identify blitzes, identify stunts, identify who's a rusher and who's not a rusher. And this has resulted in C.J. Stroud already being sacked 45 times this year. That's seven more times than he was sacked all of last year. And he is like the most highest pressured quarterback in the league. It's ridiculous. And it's hard to look downfield and find those plays on the run, you know, find those plays and those scramble drills when you can't look downfield because you're looking 5 feet in front of you to see if you're about to get clubbed.
And
that has been the biggest issue for the Texans all year long is they have been awful at keeping Seven on his feet.
It's interesting you bring that up because it sounds similar to some of the conversations we're having here about the Chiefs' offensive line, which certainly has had plenty of problems, specifically the left tackle and right tackle spot when people try to figure out why have they not got some stuff down the field, why are Mahomes' numbers maybe a little bit down. It's why when I look at Tank Dell and I see his productions dropped off, Nico Collins has come back for you guys and you're starting to see some of the production come back there. But is that why also a guy like Tank Dell has not had the season that people were expecting? Has it all come back to the offensive line?
Part of it does. Yeah, I mean, a good chunk of this goes back to the offensive line. Part of this also goes back to the beginning of the year when you had Nico Collins, Stephon Diggs, and Tank Dell all in the lineup. And look, Bobby Slowick, their offensive coordinator, just didn't know how to divvy up the throws. I mean, last year, you know, you go back to 2023, and the success of this team was if you're open, you get the football. But when they brought in Stephon Diggs, it really seemed like they tried to force the ball to Nico a certain number of times, force the ball to Steph a certain number of times. Like they're trying to make sure each guy gets their touches and keeps them happy. And it made the offense choppy. You know, they were fortunate that, you know, there were some times earlier in the year where they were able to run the football. And Joe Mixon has been a godsend for this team because everything that Joe Mixon picks up on the ground is almost always all Joe Mixon. It's not because there's some huge hole for him to go through. It's Mixon's ability to see cutback lanes and find, you know, find yards that weren't there.
We're talking to Patrick Creighton from Sports Radio 610 in Houston. Sorry to cut you out there. Go ahead.
No, as I say, when those cutback lanes aren't there, you get like what you saw last week from the Texans where, you know, they've got 30 yards on the ground. This is just kind of how it goes with the Houston Texans. The offensive line is still extremely inconsistent. And it doesn't matter what team you are. You could be the worst pass rush in the league. If you stunt, they can't block it. All year long, doesn't matter who, doesn't matter where, doesn't matter why. If you stunt, the Texans can't block it. And Steve Spagnuolo is one of the best in the business. I'm 100% certain he's going to have some new looks for the Houston Texans offensive line that they're going to have trouble with because the middle of that line, left guard, center, right guard, those guys have been awful this year. And I feel like Kansas City has this really big, prominent defensive player right smack in the middle of the defensive line. Guy wears 95, like some people have heard of him. And how the hell they're going to block him, I don't know.
We're talking to Patrick Crane from Sports Radio 610 in Houston. I would say on the flip side, that's kind of what people are saying here about how the heck are they going to protect Mahomes against a guy like Will Anderson, against someone like Danielle Hunter, knowing the tackle problems and a Texans team that's about to break a franchise record in sacks. Is the expectation there in Houston? Like that's the name of the game for this one. If the Texans are to win, they're going to have to just cause all sorts of problems for Patrick Mahomes in this offensive line.
You know, Alex, coming into the year, we all thought, oh, the Texans are going to have this dynamic, explosive offense, and the defense has a chance to be pretty good. And now here we are towards the end of the season, and it's like, the defense is really freaking good as long as they don't give up 70-yard chunk plays. And the offense is kind of like barely getting by. And this has become a defensive-oriented team. They won last week against the Miami Dolphins because the defense was great, and they made special teams plays. The offense really only got a couple of short field scores. So the defense is going to be what's going to win this game for the Houston Texans. They're going to have to get after Patrick Mahomes. And, you know, normally it's not an easy thing to do because, you know, look, Patrick's a pretty mobile quarterback. He's dealing with an ankle injury right now. So not sure how mobile he might be right now. But how they block Danielle Hunter, how they block Will Anderson, with the Chiefs having their issues at tackles and the Texans having their issues on the interior line, it's like each team's offensive line's weakness plays to the other team's strength. This might not be a very high-scoring game.
I'm kind of with you. I think we're trending towards an under in this particular game with where the lines are set in Vegas, and obviously for those of you in Kansas side here betting on FanDuel, for example. But I think the weird thing about the Texans from afar, and you can tell me if this is how Texans fans view them, they're, to me, like a slightly above average football team this year. I put them maybe slightly above a Broncos or Chargers team, which is not where I thought they were going to be. I had them playing the Chiefs in the AFC title game this year. I would be surprised at this point if that's the AFC title game that we get. The Texans fans there have hope at all that they can get things figured out come playoff time and go on a run, or is there a realization that this might be a Texans team that is one and done?
I think most fans are leaning more towards the pessimistic side of things right now. And really, it's all because of the offense. The offense has not been able to get on track. Now, this is going to be their second week where they're going to roll out, you know, their right tackle, Titus Howard, at left guard. And they're going to put their rookie, Blake Fisher, at right tackle. This was the, you know, the new offensive line alignment for last week, the first time they played. I mean, they really only started playing Titus on Friday in practice last week at that position. And Friday is kind of a walkthrough, so they really kind of slapped it together there. They've had injuries at left guard. You know, Juice Scruggs is a foot injury. He's probably out for the year. And Kenyon Green is coming back, but he was so bad that I don't think they want to put him back there, certainly not this year. I don't know if he's got a role on this team next year. So for right now, because of the lack of depth they have at the guard position, they've had to move their right tackle to play left guard and put their rookie in at right tackle. And we're going to see how well this alignment progresses over the next couple of weeks. It looks like this is what it's going to be for them going forward and into the postseason. You know, right now you look at like, wow, you could four seed, you know, as the division champion, and you got to play the Baltimore Ravens first week, you know, wild card weekend. I don't know how good you feel about that if you're a Texans, because Lamar Jackson's 4-0 against the Houston Texans. And boy, if there's anybody else I could see, would I rather see the Broncos or the Chargers every day of the week? So, and then of course, you know, you get the Texans, you're going to play the Chiefs on Saturday, and then Christmas Day. Oh, look, it's the Ravens. So, yeah, it's definitely a trial by fire for this new revamped offensive line, and they've kind of got to get it together, and they got to get it together in a hurry, or they might very well be a one-and-done team in the postseason.
couple more minutes here with Patrick Creighton from our sister station down in Houston, Sports Radio 610. You brought up the short turnaround. It's been a huge topic here. The three games in 10 or 11 days, playing the Texans Saturday, then they got to go on the road on Christmas Day to play at Pittsburgh. And I think outside of Kansas City, a lot of people hear that as like whining, hey, there's all these other teams have to do that as well. The complaint here is that, hey, well, the Chiefs had a week six bye, Patrick, and Chris Jones publicly said, hey, if you're going to have late in the year 3 and 10 days, all right, that's fine, but you got to give these teams late season byes. The Chiefs had week six. I think the Texans and Ravens had a week 14 bye. That's where fans here are frustrated.
No, and you should be. You know, I mean, look, the Texans had a week 14 bye. Man, they were beat to hell going into that game. And, you know, coming into the bye week. So, yeah, you know, on one hand, you bye early in the week, in the year, like week six, and then you've got to play 3 and 10 days at the end of the year. That's insane. And whoever thought this up, like, literally should be launched into the moon or a rocket ship, probably made by SpaceX, and it'll blow up before it gets there. But when you get into, like, hey, you get your bye week, week 14. Okay, well, your team is beat to hell. Come out, okay, now play 3 and 10 days. It's like, well, all right, well, we're finally getting some kind of rest, and now you're going to kick our ass again. So, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And it really points to the NFL. If they want to continue to do this, they're going to need to expand the schedule, and you're going to need to go to two bye weeks.
Last one for you, Patrick. How do you, in the guys in Houston, view the Chiefs? You know, we know the national narrative is, of course, they're the luckiest team. Their point differential is not any good. There's one fraction, one faction of the Chiefs fan base that would say, all right, this team's not good enough to go to the Super Bowl. Then there's other fans that would say, hey, this team last year, people counted them out and they figured it out in the playoffs. Where are you kind of at when you watch the Chiefs?
Well, Alex, as you know, I am not above putting the tongue firmly in the cheek. And listen, we know that every referee group in the NFL 100% always favors the Kansas City Chiefs. They
right.
get every call. Yeah. Like how many times we got to hear that narrative? That's the kind of thing. It's just like, all right, like, we watch enough games to know, like, this is not like the 2017, 2015, like, Golden State Warriors, where they literally get every call. You know, Kansas City is just a really damn good team. And, you know, you get a Hall of Fame quarterback. Well, I don't care how good or bad a regular season he's having. When the money's on the line, Patrick Mahomes can elevate his game higher than anybody else can elevate their game. So, they are the Kansas City Chiefs. So they are the two-time defending champs. And anybody who is going to give any disrespect to them does so at their own peril. And that's why they're 13-1. You're not 13-1 because, oh, man, you're so lucky. Oh, man, I can't believe you got away with this. It's 13-1. So I think most fans still, especially here, still look at Kansas City as, that's Kansas City. They always beat us. Patrick Mahomes is still quarterback God. And until proven otherwise, that's how it should be.
Patrick Creighton from Sports Radio 610 in Houston. Great to have you on the show, man. Good to hear from you. Happy holidays. Best wishes and everything to the family as well.
Appreciate you, brother. Happy holidays. Happy New Year to you.
There you go. Patrick Creighton with us here on 96.5 The Fan. Good perspective on the Texans. Maybe that gives you some hope. There's still some fans out there, even outside of Kansas. Not every single fan thinks it's all a conspiracy for the Chiefs. There's other people out there, Drew, that can actually step away and also be smart about how they discuss the Chiefs.
I'm smart when I discuss the Chiefs.
That wasn't to you. I'm saying like there when he was joking about the referee stuff. No, that wasn't directed at you at all. I'm just saying we hear so much that fans outside of Kansas City think, you know, it's just the refs and all this kind of stuff. And so it was nice to hear someone that is in Houston also acknowledge that. No, of course, that's not what it is. You're not accidentally 13-1. As far as the Texans go, I think it was very clear hearing him discuss their O-line problems. There's a lot of similarities here. They're having a new look O-line start for the second week in a row. They've got some O-line challenges. Their quarterback can't stay upright. It's impacting some of the other stuff down the field. We know in Kansas City the discussion is about not protecting Mahomes and impacting stuff down the field. I think there's some similarities in how both these teams have gotten to this point. One team is still 13-1, but if you're wondering why have the Texans not looked as dominating as people thought, it's also because of their offensive line.
No, that and then, you know, you look at some of the wide receiver injuries. Tank Dell hasn't been as good as he was last year. I think along with the fact that, again, they haven't looked as good as the Chiefs because as great as D'Amico Ryans is, he's not Andy Reid. and, you know, they have Spags as well, and they find ways to get it done. Because one, that was one of the things that we all thought, I think, preseason, too, was they're in the AFC South. They should be able to skate by this division, which they still technically
rack
have
up a bunch of wins, and they could still end up with, I guess, 10 or 11 wins.
It was a similar conversation to what we had about Jacksonville, really, even 2 years ago, where we went into last year saying, hey, Jacksonville can get 13, 14 wins, and then we'll see where they're at. It didn't happen. It's not happening again with the Houston Texans. So it's definitely weird how that's – they're a really good team, but they're one of the teams that you don't take seriously. Maybe part of it's because of the division that they play in, where even if they did – say Houston had 12 wins this year or 13 wins – you couldn't take them fully serious because of the division thing, where they have to actually go out on the field and prove it. And I think this is a opportunity for them to go out and prove, hey, we can beat the Chiefs. But it's just when you combine them, they're similar, but the Chiefs are just better because they find ways to win where the Texans haven't been able to do that.
We're going to talk more about this matchup, obviously, in the noon hour, not only with Jay Binkley at 12:30, but just some of the other kind of numbers that go with the conversation as it relates to their struggles. And I don't think it's all on C.J. Stroud, but that's why we view them differently, is because C.J. Stroud is simply not having as good of a year. Yes, there's more to the story, the O-line, but he was the rookie of the year and set these records. That's why people thought this year he could maybe be an MVP candidate. It was never in the MVP conversation, not for a second this year, and just doesn't look the same. In understanding it's the O-line is part of that equation as well, but that's why they're not
there
as dangerous.
He only had like 100. He might have, I don't know if he had a game with less than 100 yards, but it was close to floating around like Jared Goff sort of numbers. I don't know if they won the game or not, but there's times when he only had like maybe 10 or 11, 12 completions in an entire game.
The Chiefs should be able to get pressure on C.J. Stroud tomorrow afternoon.
It's a nightmare for him.
The game right here on 96.5 The Fan, noon kickoff. That means pregame begins at 9 a.m. You'll hear Dan Israel, Josh Klingler, Mitch Holthus, Dane and Hughes. You're on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. You passed this along to me. You know, Barstool Sports, everybody has their own opinion on them or whatever, but I'll tell you what's been really fun to watch recently is since John Gruden joined them, and again, everybody has an opinion on John Gruden as well, but the content has been really interesting, hearing him tell stories about his time as a head coach and all kinds of sorts. He was telling a story the other day about Sebastian Janikowski kicking a field goal drunk during a game or whatever. I mean, so just bizarre stuff that we haven't heard before, including a story John Gruden told about when he was on the same coaching staff. Mike Holmgren was the head coach. And him and Andy Reid were both really, and Gruden has always been younger, but like you get what I'm saying. Like, they're still younger guys in the coaching profession. Andy was older at the time. But the competition that existed on the staff trying to get Mike Holmgren's attention, basically. Listen to this.
Well, it had to be Andy. You know, it had to be Andy Reid. We're on Mike Holmgren's staff in Green Bay. Andy played for Mike Holmgren at BYU. So he was kind of the teacher's pet, you know. Yeah. So we had this big board. Me and Mariucci and Andy Reid were young coaches at the time. And we would put the plays on the board with the formations. And these are the plays that we think should be in the game plan. And Holmgren would be doing his thing. He'd come in, he'd sit there and look at the board. And in a different color would be a new play. And Holmgren was always, he was always like, whose play is that? Andy goes, that's my play. That's 69 handoff solid. You get on the board and draw it. Mike would put it in. And Andy would like look at me and Mooch like, I'm smarter than you guys.
Yeah.
So Andy would get a play in the game plan, and it would be called. And it gained 6 yards or it gained 8 yards. And Andy would walk around the office all week like, that's
some That's awesome.
So now we're not playing good. And people are starting to get on Holmgren's ass a little bit. So we go into the room. There's all the plays. And there's this play called Fox 3, fullback slide, 58, all go Z search. Holmgren's like, what are those plays? I go, those are my two plays. And I had a cut up and I, well, you don't like our plays? Is that what your problem is? You don't want to run our, and he was on my ass, like yelling at me. So we go play the Bears on Halloween night. It's pouring down rain, the worst night in the history of football. 3rd and 2, early in the game, Holmgren calls red left, fake Fox 3, naked right, fullback slide. I swear to God, Brett Favre kept it, runs it in, longest touchdown run of his career, 36 yards on Monday Night Football. I'm on the sidelines. I'm not saying anything, but I'm like, that's my play. So listen, late, this is a true story. Late in the game, we just need a first down, the game's over. And it's like 3rd and 14. And I had seen Dan Marino run an all-go with a little search route. And I put that play in, and Sterling Sharp ran it better than Mark Clayton and Mark Duper ever ran it. Favre threw it like a 23-yard gain to ice a game. That's my play too. So we get on the plane, and Holmgren's sitting in the front with Ron Wolf, the GM, and I'm in the back. I'll never forget this. I got my beer, and I'm drinking it. I'm thinking, that was the greatest day of my life. Holmgren turns around. He goes, hey, Gruber. Calls me Gruber. Hey, Gruber, come down here. I walk down a thing. I sit next to him. He goes, game ball. Hell of a job. I turn around, I walk back to my seat, I see Andy Reid, and I go, game ball! I love competing with Andy Reid.
That's awesome. That's just a great story. They were asking basically the coach he had the biggest rivalry with. We all know John Gruden was actually at Chiefs training camp this year for a couple days, kind of just watching things, was in team meetings. And since then, Gruden's been hired. He's working full time, right? Isn't he for Barstool?
I think so. Yeah, I think
he's full time with Barstool. And they have him like when they watch football games, they'll have a live stream basically, and he tells stories like this one. And some of them are pretty good, man. Some of them are pretty good. And that was really cool to hear.
The videos of him that got me feeling nicey because somebody goes nuts, or like a player goes nuts, mm-hmm. a running back goes nuts because he loves his running backs, always talking about
sure. that. Sure. Yeah, that's a really good Andy Reid story.
Yeah, I think Bink would really appreciate that. Like Bink and John Gruden talking about football, like, you wouldn't be able to get him out of the room talking about football.
Yeah, that'd be a bit much, I feel like. That'd be a bit much.
I mean, he's over here naming the play. Spider 2Y banana. Okay. Fullback slide. Okay.
Yeah, Bink's going to join us at 12:30, by the way. We'll talk a ton of college football with Bink, also some NFL. It's been a bit since we had Bink on the show, so I'm looking forward to having him call in the noon hour today. Someone on the text line, 913-586-7965, said, are they ever going to pay off their bet? That's in reference to Sports Radio 610 in Houston. They're our sister station. That's a throwback. So, Pat, it's not that the reason why I didn't bring it up because that wasn't on Patrick. He was not at the station at the time. But that station, going back to the AFC divisional round game where the Chiefs, we all know, were in the huge hole in the divisional round, first quarter, and then they make the comeback, they end up covering. We had made a bet with that station. I think there's one person still at that station who we made the bet with. That's not who we just had on the show.
Still just one person.
I think
left,
it was Clint. Who does afternoon?
Clint Sterner, yeah.
Yeah, he does afternoon drive at that station, I think. Doesn't he co-host with Ron down there?
I think so. Okay. Yeah, I think so.
So, but they weren't doing the show together at the time. But anyway, we made a bet. We said if the Chiefs, and they wouldn't do the Chiefs straight up. They said we had to give the Texans points. And we did. And then remember, the Chiefs were down 24-0 or whatever it was. And so they were feeling great because they also had the seven points. So then Chiefs come all the way back and still cover. We never got our barbecue. They owed us barbecue. Here we are 5 years later, I guess. They still owe us barbecue.
You guys should have mentioned that at Radio Row. Because they were next to us.
I don't know if Clint was there.
Clint was there.
Ah, dang it.
I met Clint there.
Well, the reason why this got brought back up, too, is I was on a different station in Houston yesterday. The producer of the show that we made the bet with back in 2020 is now a producer at a different station in Houston. Mm. And he brought it up yesterday. And that's how I found out the names of the people involved. But yes, Houston, we don't make bets with them. They don't come through. Sorry. They don't come through with their bets. We appreciate our friends in Buffalo. They've had to send us food multiple times for playoff bets. They pay their debts.
And you guys would have paid the debt.
Yeah. The Chiefs fortunately keep winning, so we haven't had to send anybody anything. Thank you very much, Patrick Mahomes. Mm. But we'll gladly make a bet with Buffalo again in the playoffs if it gets to that point. But we're out on a Houston bet. They still owe us some brisket or whatever. Not that we got barbecue here, but the point, it was more about the principle of the bet.
Oh, 100%. Someone said, do you really want inferior barbecue?
I'm with you. Look, I grew up in Kansas City. You guys all know that. So I like KC barbecue better. I lived in Houston for a couple years. There's some good barbecue down there. It's different. I'll take ribs and burnt ends over anything else, though, here in Kansas City.
My wife
over
did.
Brisket down there.
So my wife did say something. We were talking about barbecue.
Oh, boy.
She loves Kansas City barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
Loves Kansas City barbecue.
But,
So have you heard of Dickie's barbecue?
Oh, jeez.
Hang on.
Oh,
Hang on. She goes, man, it's one of those Dickie's barbecue baked beans. Sound really good.
They have that in Houston. I've had it before. That's a chain, though. Like, that's
correct.
That's a chain.
Correct. It is a chain. But she was like, I mean, Kansas City barbecue is really good, but is there that much of a difference? That was kind of the line of thinking that she was going on.
We got to get you to some other barbecue. You still haven't done the barbecue tour, have you? You've gotten how many different barbecue places here?
Haven't been to the tour. We're planning on going to Johnny's barbecue here. I don't know if it's it might be today or over the weekend.
We got to go to a break. How many barbecue places in town have you gone to? You don't have to name them if you don't want. But how many?
Three.
Okay, we got it. Yeah. Okay, and the three. I know one of them for sure. You've been to Smokehouse, right?
Correct.
Have you
been to Joe's?
You've been to Joe's, and what's the third?
Not Gates.
Q39?
Yes.
Okay. There's some other ones you got to go to.
I still need to experience Gates. I feel like, based on what everybody's told me, I need to go in with the right frame of mind of I know exactly what I'm ordering. Just give me the easiest thing to order, I guess.
Yeah. You got to go to some more. You got to take your wife to some more barbecue places so she doesn't keep talking about Dickie's Barbecue, chain barbecue from Dallas.
She just said it sounded good. That's all she said.
All right. Up next, man, we'll get to what's trending, and we'll talk more about how the Chiefs can attack the Texans. Plus, Jay Binkley going to talk some college football with us next.